What's up, everyone, and welcome into the Buffalo Sports Collective. It is June 27th, 2022. Phil, is it shocking to you this is our last regular scheduled episode of June?
It is. I thought May moved really, really quickly, and I think we both kind of admitted, like, whoa, where did May go? We're already into June, and now June is gone, and we're into July with July 4th around the corner. Pretty insane. Pretty insane. We are officially into the true summer season, as Mother Nature intended, I guess, through June 21st. Now we are, what, are we getting, our daylight is getting less now from now on until through winter, but we're not going to talk about winter just yet because we're not quite into July.
Yeah, it's been weird because usually June, July, and August are our slow months here, and I know that June kind of picked up and was a lot more fun-filled because the Bandits were still playing, which is very unusual, not just because the Bandits are playing in late June, but because this podcast hadn't been able to cover the Bandits, so we've just been based off of what happened in June, and I know the Sabres ended in late May last year because it had that condensed short season, but it's been, the June month went by a lot quicker than I was anticipating, and I'm very interested to see how July works as well, because I think July is going to fly by. They always say, once you hit 30, the years go by a lot quicker, and that's what seems to be happening for me, at least.
Yeah, I mean, we can slow it down a little bit with, we got a lot coming up, so that's exciting.
We do.
And hopefully that'll just slow it down, just a smidgen.
So if you want to follow along with us, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Buffalo Sports Collective, and on Twitter, Buffalo Sports Co. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel wherever you listen to podcasts. Check out our website at BuffaloSportsCollective.com and look for the time breakdowns in the descriptions of our show. So we will start with the Buffalo Bisons. It was a fun series that was. They ended up winning it 4-2 over the St. Paul Saints, and we'll go over Friday's game, we'll go over Saturday's game, and Sunday's game, and then we're wrecked as the whole last three games. Friday, they won it in walk-off fashion once again, same way they did on Wednesday's game. They won 5-4. Bisons led 3-1 after two, but were down 4-3 entering the eighth inning. A Grossen single drove in Lucas to tie it 4-4, and then Lucas hit a single in the bottom of the 10th to score Young on a very close play at the plate to win it. Lucas went 2-for-4 with that winning RBI and a stolen base. Young went 2-for-4 with two RBIs, and Pounce was the only pitcher to give up an earned run in this one, as they used 6 to get them through 10 innings pitched. Saturday, they lost this one 7-4. Two run innings from the Saints in the fourth, the sixth, and the ninth were enough to give the Bisons the loss. Now, Lucas and Taylor both hit solo shots in this one. Large went 2-for-4. Young went 2-for-3 with two walks and three stolen bases. Hatch went 5 2/3 of an inning, allowing 4 earned runs, 8 hits, walking 2, and striking out 5. Johnson continues to struggle this year in a bad stretch. Remember how he was so dominant last year, Phil? He was so good, but he gave up 2 2 innings pitched. And then Sunday, it was another close one, but they won this one 2-1. Bisons were held hitless through 4 innings, and that's when I saw the Buffalo Bisons put out a tweet trying to jinx the St. Paul Saints, like, hey, we've been hitless, it's 4 innings pitched, they have not allowed a hit yet, what's going on in this game, draw attention to it. And it worked, because they were down 1-0 until the 6th inning, when Warmoth would hit a 2-run shot to give the Bisons the lead. They would not give away. 6 pitchers were used in this one to get them through all the innings, and they only allowed 6 hits from the Saints to win this one, like I said, 4-2 in this series. I guess, Phil, what stood out in these three games and then the series overall?
Obviously, the walk-off and the couple of walk-offs are something, like we mentioned, we saw a lot last year, starting to see it a little bit more this year. It's exciting baseball to see walk-offs anytime a team comes back, but I think that's just the more interesting thing part of it is that, yes, they were up 3-1, and then they were down 4-3. It's just a little bit more of the resiliency when you see the walk-offs when you're down going into the game late and just being able to stay in it, fight back, and then not only fight back, but get the win. So I think those are huge moral victories in a very long season. Obviously, ones that give your team a little bit of excitement and juice going into the next game. Obviously, that didn't really translate to much here as they lost 7-4 in the second game. Hatches, 4 earned runs and 5 innings, almost 6 innings. I think that is pretty much right on the borderline of what we would consider a good or bad start. I think that's pretty much as bad of a good start as you could possibly have, in my opinion. I think that's just, you don't want to give up 5 runs in 6 innings, so he only gave up 4 and 5 2/3. So very close to a bad start, but I think that's still considered just an average start, I guess we'll give him. Not a good start, but an average start. Eight hits is a little high. Walking two doesn't help. Five strikeouts, not bad, but you expect a little bit more from Hatch, but at least it wasn't a meltdown, so that's good to see. I think their starters just, they need starters. They simply need starters. I know we've talked about a lot of these bullpen games. We've seen a lot of pitchers used to get through these games in general. Like you said, six in the first one, six in the third one, and you had your starter go 5 2/3, so you didn't need to have quite as much in the Saturday loss, but you also lost that game, so that doesn't go well for us going against bullpen games either. So I think the biggest thing that you can see out of all these is that the Bisons are missing true starting pitching. They're missing a true rotation. I don't know, again, we're still kind of confused at what's going on with that. I don't know if it is a manager thing, if they just do not trust their starters and they're using just more and more pitchers going not quite as far. But Hatch and Lawrence seem to be their main two go-to actual true starting pitchers. And outside of that, I haven't seen much in recent memory that really shows you a true starting pitching. I think that's just something they're missing. It's very strange to see a team doing as well as they are in first place, or at least, you know, toward the top of the league, and not having a true starting rotation. That's just something you don't often see in baseball. And then, again, to be hitless through four, it's obviously a little bit demoralizing, but another one, you got to stick with it. And especially in baseball, I think the big thing with that one is that your defense and pitching really led the way in that 2-1 victory. I mean, even though you were hitless through four, I think that just the fact that your offense and or your pitching and defense got you through the rest of that game and kept you in it allowed just warm off that 1-2-run shot to win it. So winning the series overall 4-2 is huge. I think every single time you do that in a series, that's just massive for the Bisons. Anytime you win a series 4-2 out of these six-game series, that's just very good baseball and continues to improve your record. But overall, a pretty good series. Just I think the biggest thing that stands out again is the lack of starting pitching.
Yeah, 100%. I know there are two of the top 19 top prospects in the Blue Jays system that are up in Double A now. I know one of them just got called up today to Double A, so he's going to be there a while, but there's another one that has made five or six starts up there. So it's not that if they earn their spot, there's going to be room for him up in the Triple A lineup with the Buffalo Bisons. So if they do perform pretty well down in Double A, they should be able to get up the call. But I think you're going to be seeing a lot more of these bullpen games. I mean, they did very well this series. I will own up to it. They complaining about it nonstop, but they definitely did step up and they did very well. But I just don't know how long they're going to be able to do this. These arms are going to get burnt out very quickly. I don't know if they're just holding on until some of these guys get back. I know Anthony Kay is just making a rehab start and he can be a starting pitcher. I know there's a couple other guys that are kind of, you know, Algieri's only going 2 2/3. So there are some guys that are capable of going longer innings. I don't know why they're not letting Algieri go longer than he is. I don't know if they're just trying to get his arm strength back and trying to extend him that way. But, I mean, there's a Francis, but you're going to have to be able to slowly get him back because he's only pitching 2-3 innings max. And
you not know, doing very well in those innings.
Not doing very well in those. I mean, he did do well on Sunday. They did. He did. I think he earned a save or holding this one. But it's definitely an issue moving forward that, yes, they're doing well now. They're playing huge amounts of small ball, and based on the runs they're allowing and the runs they're scoring, they're doing a pretty darn good job of it. But it's a bit nerve-wracking when you're looking at it and going, okay, we're only in the end of June. We got to get through July. We got to get through August, September, and even some in October. That's 3.5 months that you have to get through, and you're burning these bullpen arms like nonstop. Like they're pitching 3 to 4 times in a series where sometimes they would only see them 1 or 2 times. So in the long run, this is going to hurt them. In the short term, you can kind of do damage control with it. And I know the Blue Jays injuries are not helping them whatsoever, but I mean, you're down Castillo. He's up in the big leagues now. Lawrence is really your only true starting pitcher besides Hatch, who is, you know, up and down a bit this year. I know he's been better of recent, but it's definitely a concern for the long haul rather than the short haul. And I'm hoping that I know that minor league system, it's not all about winning. Yes, you would like to win to instill that winning mentality in the minor leagues, but I'm wondering that when the trade deadline starts rolling around in July, are they going to be looking for some depth starting pitching? Because even if the big leagues, you can call up Lawrence, you can put in Castillo and stuff like that, but are you going to be looking for more depth in the AAA lineup? Because if some of these starters up in the Blue Jays system get hurt, who are you going to be able to call up? Because there's nobody down there right now besides Lawrence. That's it. I mean, Hatch you can roll out there, but are you going to trust him? So it's just, are they going to address the AAA lineup, or are they going to be looking to add to the bullpen up in the big leagues? So it's going to be a very interesting thing, because not only will it affect the buy, or whatever they do will affect the Blue Jays, it's going to have a trickle-down effect. So will it help? Is it going to help the Fisher Cats down in AA? How is it going to affect the Bisons? So the July trade deadline is going to be very huge. And remember, with the Tellez deal, that's what brought over Broden Francis last year and was a huge influx of starting pitching talent last year. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do in July with that trade deadline.
The other thing you kind of notice for these wins as well, and again, they won the series and they obviously have a very good record, so it's kind of hard to nitpick some of this, and sometimes it is just working with the roster you have. And I think they've done a really good job kind of changing their mentality, which is a good way to adapt. I think Candel's done a good job with this, but I think another thing that kind of stands out is you won with 5 runs, you lost with 4 runs, and you won with 2 runs. They're just, the offense is just not hitting nearly as well as they were last year. It's something that, you know, we talked about often last year with their pretty high scoring games they had at times and a lot more home runs last year than they are this year. So it's, again, not something they technically need to address. I think they've adapted very well to, like you said, playing a lot more small ball and just really not expecting to score many of your runs through power and through those, you know, doubles, triples, home runs. So they're just not really seeing a lot of that power in this lineup. But it is something that I think is a pretty big switch from last year. We'd have to pull up and compare home runs at this point in the season last year compared to this year, but it seems like there's a lot less home runs and a lot less just power on this team, and they've switched to more of a small ball approach to win these games.
Yeah, and again, that's credit to Casey Candel. That's noticing what is in your lineup and adjusting to them. And I love those kind of coaches that they don't coach their philosophy. They coach to the players they have. And those are the successful coaches that you can adjust on the fly, and you're not sticking there, you know, Ralph Krueger, I'm talking to you, that don't just try to instill their system in the players that don't fit it. Rex Ryan tried that. Ralph Krueger tried that. Those two coaches are out of league. Not very good. You try to instill the system that works for the players. Don Granato doing well. Sean McDermott doing well. These good coaches that are able to adjust to the players they have, build the system around them rather than try to instill your own system, are the ones that are going to be successful. And I mean, if Casey Candel keeps a stretch up where he is pulling rabbits out of a hat and out of his butt every single series now because of the call-ups that are happening, the injuries that are going down, having to win these close games and these small balls like you've been preaching nonstop, where it's just they're one of the lowest scoring teams in all of AAA, but they're also giving up one of the lowest ERAs in all of AAA as well. So not only are you getting not as much run support, but your pitchers are doing just enough to get them by. So like I said, it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with the bullpen. But on top of not just the pitchers, I thought Lucas and Taylor had huge series. I mean, Taylor alone had, what, 4 home runs in this series alone? I mean, he is coming on strong. He's taken that place of Gabriel Moreno and stepped up, and his name is going to start shooting up prospect boards, and he is definitely making a name for himself in AAA, not only with the steals, not only with the prospect pedigree he has right now, but now he's adding power to it as well. I mean, he's on pace to break his record last year, which was 16. He's got 9 right now, I believe. So he's going to keep smashing these and keep staying towards the top of that order, where he's going to be able to work the walks. He's going to be able to get on base. He's going to be able to steal the bases and even hit for power. So that's the ideal type of prospect. I think you're just going to be looking for that middle to lower half of the order to try to add more of these runs. You're looking for a Warmoth, who hit that home run on Sunday to give him the win, Large to add some power. You got Grossen's to add some power. So if that all comes together and they can add a bit more runs to give him a little bit more cushion for that bullpen games that they seem to be having to go with, which, you know, I would still stretch out Francis. I would still stretch out some of these other guys that can go longer. But, I mean, it's working for him in this series, so I got to eat it. But with that, Phil, we'll move on to our BSC update for game 69. You put up 15 points. I put up a whopping 4, and that's thanks to Beasley's call-up for you. Once again, you mentioned it in the last show, and he's still, you know, handing out cookie gift cards to you. It's just wonderful for you. Game 70, you put up 8 points. I put up 5. And then in game 71, you put up -1 point. I put up -1. 1.5. So you definitely did win these this series, I believe. And I guess with that, are you making any changes? And no, Capper is not off the IL yet.
I mean, the fact that I am back within 300 points.
You are, yes.
Super excited. Couldn't be more thrilled to be once again down just under 300. It's a great feeling going into the going into July, you know, going to the into the final stretch of our game here for year one. I think it's, you know, it's a little bit of motivation for the boys and for the club to keep fighting, that we are now once again within 300. And I think Beasley might be on his way to Bison's MVP and current point leader if he is not already, because he is just up and down on a daily basis. And for a player that was not on the 40-man roster and someone I picked up simply because he was playing really good baseball, I could not be more excited about him not playing any baseball at all, but just giving me points on points on points.
Yeah, I don't think I gave the total. I am up 2560.9 to 2264.18, so that does explain Phil's excitement being under the 300 threshold. But Taylor is the point
Taylor
leader right
as
now.
Well. Wow,
yeah,
yes.
112.5, and Beasley alone has got just 69, and I would say 60 of those are just from call-ups. It's just every time you think, okay, he got called up, he's going to stick around for a while, they use him and then they send him down and call somebody else up to get a fresh arm. It's just, it was a nice addition by you.
Thank you.
Can't really complain too much because really you're only up 1.5 points in the BSC Bisons, but it's still annoying to see just a 15 spot for doing absolutely nothing.
It was good, you know, it was being a good manager. That's what it was.
Sure. We'll go with that.
And even picking up Taylor, you know, he's been great. He really has, like you mentioned him, you already mentioned him quite a bit, so I won't go too far much into it. But yeah, he is really coming on strong. I know we kind of talked about his struggles very early in the season. His batting average was a little bit lower. But like you said, just give him time and hopefully he can adapt to AAA and just really take off. And he is currently, what would you say, he's between him and Lucas, one of those two is the clear star of the Bisons right now, and he is absolutely taking off. And his versatility out there with not only the different positions he was able to play to stay in the lineup, but his stolen bases and just the added element that he adds to this team. He is a versatile weapon and just an incredible athlete and baseball player, and really excited to see how well he's doing so far.
But Phil, are you making any changes? Are you you holding steady with what you got?
No. With Capra still in his mysterious injury void, I'm going to hold because Large is also doing quite well.
That is fair, because Lopez just got sent down also, so you're going to be getting some points from him as well, and possible more future call-ups, because that's just how you built your team, and I don't like it, but I'm fine with it. So I guess we'll move on. And Phil, here's the thing. We got a series coming up here against Scranton Wilkes-Barre. We are Yankees fans. I have been tending to follow Toronto Blue Jays a bit more since we started doing this. I don't know if that's the same case for you. And I'm not saying I'm a fan of the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm not saying that whatsoever. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of what they got going on. All the youngsters that made their way through the Bison system, it's kind of hard not to root for them, especially when all the players we cover here go up and play for Toronto. So it does stink that way. But we got Scranton Wilkes-Barre coming in at 30-42. Bisons are 41-30. Scranton Wilkes-Barre has the lowest runs scored in the IL East at 268. The Buffalo Bisons are second at 315. Now for runs against, that would be second lowest in the IL East, if you're noticing a trend here for Scranton Wilkes-Barre. 312 they've allowed, and Buffalo is lowest in the IL East at 295. So not only do these teams not give up runs, they don't score runs. So it's going to be a very, very low-scoring series, Phil. It's going to be a small ball alert all over the field, and that continues with Scranton Wilkes-Barre is 19th in the IL East. All these are going to be IL East stats, so I don't have to go over that every time. They're hitting 230. Buffalo's at 14 at 244. Scranton Wilkes-Barre is 19th in home runs at 58. Buffalo is 20th last at 42. Scranton Wilkes-Barre is 20th in walks at 222. Buffalo's all the way at 8th, though, at 288. Now, strikeouts, though, they don't strike out. Phil, these teams do not strike out. Scranton Wilkes-Barre is last at 568. Buffalo is 19th at 569. Now, Scranton Wilkes-Barre is 6th in stolen bases at 73. Buffalo is at 100. So not the numbers you would prototypically see where it's just like these teams are mashing nonstop. But it, like I said, it's going to be a very low scoring game. It's going to be a lot of small balls, and you're going to be all hot and bothered with all these small ball alerts that are going to be coming in this series.
I think, again, this is just kind of further proves what we just mentioned about the Bisons adapting. Again, we might have to pull up last year's stats to see if they are truly that much more different than this year. But as you can see, the stolen bases are up. The walks are up. The ERA is not great at 14th. The home runs are dead last, like you said, at 20th. So this team, again, they don't strike out. They walk pretty well, and they steal bases quite well. So their offense is just pure small ball, as you can see by the stats, and Scranton Wilkes-Barre seems to be very similar in that exact same style, a little bit worse in the average, so they don't get quite as many base runners, and a little bit better at the home runs. It is scary to me to see, again, it doesn't really matter because the Bisons are winning, but again, long term, it could hurt them, but the fact that the Bisons are 20th with 42, and the next lowest team is Scranton with 58 for home runs, that is just... Buffalo does just not hit the long ball whatsoever. They are getting virtually just a very low percentage of their runs are from power hitting. And it's just, it's interesting to see. Again, I think their mentality has switched this year to be a little bit more of a small ball team. But at the same time, does that hurt you in the long run when you go up against some of these more powerhouse teams that can do everything Buffalo does and can also win with the long ball? So we'll see if they get any reinforcements at the trade deadline, or if any of these players like a Taylor, like a Lucas, like a Large, really just start hitting the long ball a little bit more frequently.
So for the pitching department, Scranton Wilkes-Barre is third in ERA at 4.04, and Buffalo is second at 3.96. So again, they don't give up runs whatsoever, and they also don't score runs. So it's going to be a very interesting series. Scranton Wilkes-Barre is third in strikeouts at 6.74. Buffalo is down at 13th at 6.03. And then for batting average, this further indicates how nobody is hitting off these guys. Nobody's scoring. Scranton Wilkes-Barre is first in the IL East at batting average against at 226. Buffalo's right behind them at 227. So I don't know how many more times I can say it. It's going to be such a low scoring series. There's not going to be too much excitement, but you might be able to see some walk-offs in this one because the scores are going to be so close.
At the same time, because it's baseball, we will see the highest scoring series between these two teams that we have ever seen.
It'll just be some 18-16 games.
Right, 15-10, 12-11. It'll just be, for no reason whatsoever, just be the highest scoring one. But I think another very interesting thing about these two teams is you see Scranton at 30 and 42. You see the Bisons at 41 and 30, yet a lot of their stats are very similar. So even though Scranton is having a seemingly rough season on paper, they are eerily similar to the Bisons. So it's not a team that you can kind of go in and be like, oh, they're just a bad team. They're bad at everything. They're doing exactly what the Bisons are doing correctly. They just aren't being able to kind of translate that to wins, but it's not a team that you can go in mentally thinking you're going to walk all over just because their record is a little bit lower than the Bisons.
I think when it comes down to that, it's a managerial thing. And I think having Casey Candel, who has been in this position for 2 years now, steady, same managers and everything, I think that definitely helps them, especially when they were in the championship race like they were last year. But some players to watch: Estevan Florial, center fielder. You've been hearing his name for quite a while now down in AAA. He's hitting 288 with 5 home runs, 21 RBIs, but he's also got 23 stolen bases. So he's kind of the equivalent of our Smad Taylor. So if you want a good comparison there, Miguel Andujar, left fielder, 309, 6 home runs, 20 RBIs. Hayden Wisniewski, starting pitcher, 14 starts down there, 2-7, but he's got a 4.02 ERA, and he's got 55 strikeouts compared to 22 walks, and hitters are only hitting 218 against him. JP Sears, starting pitcher, he's got 7 starts down there, 1-1, but Phil, these numbers are insane. He's got a 183 ERA with 50 strikeouts and only 6 walks. It's just unbelievable what he's doing right down there. And then Ken Waldichuk, starting pitcher, he's 6 starts down there, 2-2 with a 2.7 ERA, 42 strikeouts and 12 walks. So there you got some good starting pitchers you're going to at least see once. You're going to see some of these guys at least twice, and some good hitters in the middle of that order. So like we said, it's going to be low scoring, but the pitchers are top notch, especially that Sears guy. Wow, that's incredible numbers.
Again, very similar to the Bisons, where they have a couple pretty good hitters that'll be a little bit more consistent than the rest of the lineup. At the same time, overall, the lineup might not be sparkling and you're going to see a lot of small ball and then some pretty good starting pitching. I think it'll be interesting to see if Lawrence gets matched up with Sears and just how that kind of battle would look like. Again, probably likely very low scoring, but I'd love to see that pitching matchup. Sears, like you said, I mean, that's just, those numbers are incredible. I mean, 50 Ks to at least six walks and going seven games already is pretty incredible. And then Waldichuk and Wisniewski, I mean, just overall, their pitching is going quite well for them, as it is for the Bisons. But I think the big difference there is that they seem to have a little bit more starting pitching than the Bisons do. So I'm guessing we will see a lot of bullpen games once again from the Bisons, and we'll have to see how it all plays out.
So on our next show, we'll be able to cover the first two games in that series and kind of go over what has been happening there, give an update on the standings. Because, I mean, right now, Buffalo has a 1.5 game lead over both Lehigh Valley and Rochester. They got a 2.5 lead over Durham, 3.5 over Jacksonville, 4.5 over Worcester, and then 7.5 over Norfolk. So there are so many teams still in this race. It's anybody's ball game, and it's going to come down to the dog days of summer. And that's when we've been saying, yes, it's a long season, but if you fall too far behind, you can never make this catch up. And having them be in control right now, a game and a half up of two different teams, it's a nice position to be at, especially when your team has been ransacked by the Blue Jays so often. So Phil, we will move on to the Buffalo Bandits. I know we had a huge long episode about them on Friday. It was well received. A lot of people were listening and very well informed, but we did a little bit more digging now that we had the weekend and we're able to calm down a bit, you know, dissect everything that was done. And we found one possible situation for why they did protect Matt Vince. So, Phil, I know you can't see me, but do I get any egg on my face? I feel like I got some egg on my face.
I mean, I trust that Brooke may have thrown an egg at your face.
That is true. That's very possible. But yeah, I'm here to admit, we said on the episode that if we could find any ways that the Buffalo Bandits outthought us, and we might have possibly found a way, and I'm here to admit I'm wrong. Protecting Matt Vince means that Las Vegas, the Desert Dogs, cannot talk to Matt Vince until August 1st. The only team that can talk to him are the Buffalo Bandits until free agency opens. So them protecting him, protecting, in my opinion, and what we voted on, the most important player, the MVP of this team, making it so they're the only ones that could talk to him, I think that is a very, very smart move. Once again, proves that they are in the position they're in, and we're just talking behind a microphone for a reason. But I think it's very smart. And another reason that I think in our emotions, and like, I mean, we started recording, what, an hour or two after the list released. I think, yes, you protected Matt Vince, and, you know, even if excluding this thing, if they were still able to talk and you were able to protect another defenseman, I don't think, regardless of what was going on there, that there was any chance that Las Vegas was going to take anybody but the four you left off that group. And the four they left off was Connor Fields. So I don't think it really matters what defenseman they left off to protect Matt Vince for this reason, which if this is the actual reason they did it, which is very smart, I don't think the defenseman is going to get picked. I think if you're Vegas, 100%, I mean, as guaranteed of a pick as you can make, Connor Fields is the one that's going to be selected. And it just comes down to, are they going to be able to swing a deal to get him back?
I think they will. I mean, overall, like you said, if the Bandits are the only team that can talk to Vince until August 1st, that means essentially you can do kind of what the NFL does, where they have tampering period where you can talk to people. You see all these deals come out. They're not official deals until later, but you can have these, you know, kind of talk to the player, come up with a contract, think, you know, get the idea of what Vince is thinking. Again, he is a little bit up there in age. Obviously, his talent has not diminished whatsoever, so I'm not trying to say that, but who knows, for his own sake, how much longer he wants to play in this league. So I think the Bandits getting to talk to him about contract extensions for as long as they can before Vegas gets that opportunity is huge. I think they can, you know, kind of lay out the groundwork, lay out the framework of what a contract might look like. Obviously, it cannot be official for quite some time, but it gives a very good idea of what Vince and the Bandits can kind of come up with and just have a little bit of mutual respect there. I think that also looks good to Vince that the Bandits are willing to protect him and leave another player open simply so they can talk to him and Vegas cannot. I think that just as a player, if I was Vince, I think for me, I'd be like, okay, you know, this team, I mean a lot to them that they're willing to do this and possibly lose someone like Fields. So I think that just means a lot of respect on both the band's organization and toward Matt Vince. And I think, like I said, hopefully they can kind of just lay the groundwork of what a deal would look like. And maybe as soon as free agency opens up, you know, you see that across our, I guess we'll say, imaginary ticker, because I doubt ESPN will be having any NLL free agency specials. But who knows? Maybe they will. Maybe they will. But hopefully right away we'll see something about a new extension for Matt Vince, and we'll have to see what exactly that looks like.
So I know we brought up the Toronto Rocks thing where we said they even left Nick Rose off, goalie of the year candidate. But I think Toronto's situation was a little bit different than Buffalo's, because their team is built around their defense. So them trying to protect eight defensemen and saying, hey, Nick Rose, if you want to go talk to Vegas, go talk to him. Because, I mean, thinking of this rule, I probably would have just exposed that last defenseman, the eighth defenseman they protected, and protect Nick Rose and say, hey, we're not letting you talk to Sean Williams. Sean Williams is a great guy, great player, great coach in the system and in the league, and now he's coach and GM. He might be able to sway some of these players. So I think using this this rule, if it comes through, it's very smart for the Buffalo Bandits. So I guess with this, now that we have been able to dissect this a little bit more over the weekend, we know Connor Fields is, I mean, as guaranteed of a draft pick as a guaranteed draft pick can be. They're going to take him. They're going to make, I mean, even with everything that we said, Connor Fields has got a fiance here. He's got a house here. His job's here. If you're Vegas, you're not worried about that. You're worried about building the best team you can, building the assets you can. So you're taking him and saying, hey, Buffalo, if you want him back, you got to trade for him. So I guess with that, what is the best trade and best offer you can make if you were in the GM seat with the Buffalo Bandits saying, hey, Vegas, this is what we're offering. We want to get Connor Fields back. He belongs here. He lives here. This is his home. How about this? So, I mean, we have the draft picks up. We know all the players that are on the team. What are you offering Vegas for Connor Fields back?
I think one of the biggest things for me you have to look at for the Bandits and what they're going to offer. I think there's two sides to this that are pretty interesting. One, like you said, Fields is homegrown Fields for a reason. So overall, there's not a huge chance he goes out west, even if he is drafted. I think the Bandits will do everything in their power to come up with a way to get him here. But the other aspect of it is simply the fact that, yes, it's exciting to bring players into camp, and obviously you want as many as you can, but the Bandits currently have three draft picks that were still in college that have not even been on this team. You had solid practice squad players this entire year that kind of just sat back there and learned. And your overall roster minus, I mean, we'll go into it a little bit closer to the draft, but minus a couple players here and there, you're hoping to bring most of this team back. And if you include Fields in that, yes, again, drafting players is exciting. You want to have as much in the pipeline as you can, but there's only so many players you're going to be able to draft and keep. Eventually, these players are just going to have to be thrown back into the pool because you simply can't keep them. Obviously, bringing as many to camp and, you know, seeing as many opportunities as you can is exciting. But I think these draft, and I don't want to say like the draft picks are wasted or anything, but I don't think losing a draft pick or two to get Fields back is really that big of a deal, because at some point you're just not going to be able to bring this whole entire lineup, especially with three first rounds, a second, two fourths, two fifths. Like, there's just not enough room on this active roster to bring all of these players in. So at some point, these drafted players are just going to, you know, be cut. And it's not simply because they're bad players or because of the talent, but because the Bandits roster is already, you know, kind of in a run it back championship kind of mode. So there's not going to be a ton of room. So if you have to give an extra pick here and there for Fields, I don't think it's a massive loss, because you already know what you have in Fields. You know how talented he is. You know that he's a local product that you obviously want to bring back. So to me, with all that being said, I would go one of your three first, hopefully the latest one, which would be pick 19 that they got for Corey Small. I would take that one and couple it with maybe even a fourth if you have to, but a fourth or a fifth that, again, in the fourth and the fifth round, you have two picks in each of those rounds. So if you had to lose a first, a fourth, or a fifth, one of those, I think two draft picks are going back. One is definitely going to be a first, and then either a fourth or a fifth. I am perfectly fine with all of that to bring Fields back.
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly. You want to look at the trade that got Fields here. I mean, Fields is a year older. He did prove this year, though, that, I mean, he can definitely score with the best of them. I mean, over 30 goals, over 50 points. And it took a first and a second to get him here, like you said. But you know he wants to be an East Coast kid. You know his whole life is here. You know he definitely doesn't want to go out to Vegas. So, I mean, that also plays a factor into it. I think you hit the nail on the head. You're going to at least give up a first-round pick for him, I think. I mean, like you said, the three draft picks that aren't even in here yet, that you had Sam LaRue, who didn't really play much, two games. You had Brad McCauley, who only played in five. And then you add in, you got three first-round picks in 2022 this coming year. You have, I mean, you can call pick 19 not a first-round pick. I understand that's a compository pick. But I think you're probably going to want to hold on to Buffalo's, your own, and the Toronto draft pick you got, because those are a lot earlier. I mean, those are picks, what, there's 15 teams in the league now, so that would be picks 14 and 13, I believe it's probably going to be, Toronto and Buffalo's, 13 and 14. So, 13, 14, 19 is that, that's my guess is what those picks are going to be. I think 19 is a good starting place for him, and then if you want to chip in, they have one more fourth round pick. I can't remember if it's going to be the Colorado one or the Buffalo one, whatever the one they didn't trade to New York, or the fifth round where you got your own pick and Philly's pick where they got him from Nolan Clayton, that trade before the season started. So I think I'm in the same camp as you, one of the first round picks and a fifth round pick. I think that'll get it done. If you want to, even if they're going to try to push it down the road, if you want to give up that first round pick that you got in New York from 2024, which I think is going to be a very late pick just because, once again, Jeff Teat is not human. So I think they're going to be a playoff team down there. But I think for now, pick 19 and send them Philly's fifth round pick. That should get it done and bring Connor Fields back. And it sets Vegas up nicely with another first round pick, number 19 overall. You got another fifth round pick that you can bring in. Because remember, in this draft, they're only going to be able to draft 14 players. 14 players are coming. They got to build the rest of their team from free agency, from the draft and everything. So if you give them more picks and more trade chips in the draft where they can even move up, I think they'll be more interested in that than you know, a kid that doesn't want to be on the West Coast.
I think overall, the only thing that would really kind of surprise me, I guess there's two sides to this. I think a happy surprise would be something like the second round pick and then the fourth round pick, something like that. A 2 and a 4 or 2 and a 5 would be a very fun surprise for Banditland to keep all three of your first. But I think, again, with three first round picks, even if they are a little bit later, you're losing likely one of them, especially knowing, like you said, using a first and a second to get Fields originally. I would imagine if Vegas is smart, and Williams will be, that he's going to be looking for at least a first in return, which just makes sense. So I think you're unlikely to keep that. But I think the big thing that you don't want to see is maybe two first round picks, anything like that. I think that would be a little bit pricey, or just overall a first and a second again, losing that to then keep Fields in back-to-back years would be tough to swallow. But at the same time, Fields is exactly what the Bandits need on that side. So it'd be tough, but overall, I think Fields would be worth it again. But hopefully, best case scenario, I think you would see maybe, I doubt it, but maybe a second and a fourth would be, again, your best case scenario, looking at a Fields trade to return him to Buffalo.
I would not be disappointed in that whatsoever. If that happened, I would be very happy that they kept their three first and maybe even use them to package to move up, because like we said, we don't need a ton of more talented players on this team. I mean, you'll take them, but there's only so much room, so you're going to end up having to lose these guys to free agency when you cut them in training camp anyway. So why not package these picks and move up to get one of the more, I don't want to say talented, because you never know what they're going to pan out to be in the NLL, but you higher chance of hitting on a pick like a Teo Kananako that went third. I don't think you're going to be able to get up that high, but if you package two or three of those first round picks, see how high you can get up and bring in another talented player onto this team rather than three. You know what I mean? So I think trading up is another option moving forward as well. If you're keeping all three of those and not losing Connor Fields, I think that would be the ideal scenario. But remember, July 7th is the expansion draft. Buffalo, credit to them, they did go on Instagram and Facebook and correct the date. It is July 7th. I was still confused on it. I was like, I still don't think it's going to July 9th, but they kept it overnight. They fixed it the next morning. So they addressed it. So July 7th, it's going to be a busy Thursday afternoon, Phil, because the NHL draft is that too. But we'll move on to the PLL update. The Bandits are back in action in the PLL. The Chaos, though, the Buffalo Chaos did lose 18-9. Yes, I read that correctly. 18-9. They got doubled up. Smith had 2 goals, 2 assists on 7 shots and a turnover. Frazier had 3 goals, 5 shots, 1 ground ball, 4 turnovers, and a cause turnover. Byrne had an assist, 7 shots, 3 turnovers. McKay had 1 shot. Manicoke, and remember, Manicoke did not play. He was a healthy scratch, trying to get his first action into the PLL. I'm assuming it's going to be next week. Hopefully it's going to be next week. Fingers crossed. I would love to see all these guys. And then Coutier and Adler are on the pup list. And then Fields did not play for his team as well. He was a healthy scratch too. I think both those players are just slowly working back into the lineup, trying to get their first PLL action out of the way for this season.
I could also see some of those players just, especially, I mean, Nanakoke's a little bit different because he's never played in the PLL. So I think he just needs a little bit of time to get used to that team, whereas most of these guys, like the Smith, Frazier, Byrne, McKay, they were all on the team last year, so they can just kind of hop right back in and they know all the guys and just move on. But a player like Fields might just have taken that first day, again, either to get used to the team again or just to take a week off to actually heal from the championship and just take a 1 week rest and then get right back at it. So it'll be interesting to see. I think the Chaos are now 0-4, and I think this is kind of similar to how their season went last year, where they just weren't that good in the season and then kind of rode that momentum all the way to a championship. So hopefully with the Buffalo Chaos now there, fully suited up and ready to go for that team, they can start turning it on and right the ship of the season.
Yeah, another week of gelling amongst each other to get it right. But that seems to be the route Chaos do every year, where they're struggling and then they make it to the finals once again. And they won it last year. I mean, I think, I don't quote me on this, but I think they made it to the finals every single year. So, I mean, they finally got over the hump last year. I can see them doing the same kind of thing where they're, I mean, you got to be a little bit more careful because some teams do not make the playoffs. I think this year it's probably going to be 2 teams don't make the playoffs. So you have to start piling on those wins eventually. But this is normal territory for the Buffalo Chaos. They've been there before. But we will move on to the Buffalo Sabres now. Like I said, the first round is happening July 7th. Rounds 2 through 7 are July 8th. So that's going to be a very, very busy weekend for us, Phil. It's very long episodes in store for us there. But the picks that the Buffalo Sabres have are 9, 16, and 28. We've said that multiple times. Now, my question, though, because, I mean, we know your opinion on the NHL draft. We know my opinion on the NHL draft. We don't really love them. We don't really love them. So my thought is, why, instead of just going over prospects that we, you know, we might not even see for 3 to 4 years, who knows? We're not NHL experts. We're not scouting experts. We're not going to be able to dissect these players and kind of give you, like we could with the NFL. We know a little bit more of the NFL. You're going to see these players instantly. It's a lot more fun to dissect them and kind of give a preview and a mock draft and stuff like that. But the NHL is a little different animal. There's other people and other podcasts and other groups and stuff that do it so much better than we could. So why not even just try to, there's no competing with them. That doesn't make any sense. So I guess we'll get a little bit more creative. What do you want to see them do with those picks? Do you want to see them trade them? Do you want to see them, you know, move up? Do you want to see them? What positions are you looking for if they do use them? I guess in total, what are your thoughts on picks 9, 16, and 28 on July 7th?
So I'd have to dive a little bit deeper and look into who I would want. But the first scenario I would love that will absolutely not happen because it just doesn't happen in the NHL. And I know you would love to see it as well, but again, we both know it's not going to happen, so we'll get the fun, not going to happen scenario out of the way. But using your first, second, third, fourth, whatever you need to go after a restricted free agent on a different team, I would absolutely love. Use all of it, spend all the money you have to spend, because why not grab a super exciting young player from a different team and just be that team. Finally be that team that the NHL just doesn't have. Everybody plays so nice and nobody ever goes after restricted free agents. You finally have your own first, second, third, and fourth round picks, which you need to get some of those top talented players. And I don't think you need them. You don't need these picks. I mean, just use the player that you have already seen proven, and he's young and he can be on your team for a long time. You don't have to go after, you know, someone who's a top restricted free agent where you're going to lose all your picks and have to pay $10, $11, $12 million, but go after someone a little bit more medium range who is still looking like a great young prospect, and, you know, use the picks you have to go after a proven player rather than someone you're kind of hoping pans out, which we know, as we've both just said, the NHL is extremely hit or miss in their draft. But again, that's not going to happen, so we will, I guess, ignore that fun scenario. As far as what I would actually like to see, especially with 3 first-round picks, I know 2 of them you got what, an early-ish, a middle, and then a late. I think overall I'd like to see at least two of those traded, hopefully, for an actually established player. Hopefully a veteran. I don't necessarily want a veteran toward their end of their career, but it's hard to say in trades how much in the NHL that draft picks are actually valued as well. I mean, I know for the Eichel trade, a lot of things, you know, you have to get at least a first round coming back, maybe a second, a third. You know, you're really hoping for just a lot of draft picks coming back for a player of that caliber. And you got a first and a second, plus obviously some players that end up being very good. So it's kind of hard to tell if you can just go, hey, we'll give you a first round pick for player X, and they'll just say, okay, that looks great. But overall, that's kind of what I'd like to see. I think the two big things you're looking for the Sabres are a veteran forward who's a top six offensive player and a veteran defender who's a top four defenseman. So those are obviously going to be a little more pricey, but you have three first round picks. I'd like to see the Sabres keep their own unless a trade comes available that is pretty much, you know, you just don't want to pass it up and you absolutely want to take it. Then I'm fine with them getting rid of all three of their first, but overall I'd like to see them keep their own and then use those later two first round picks to trade to get an actually established player. You also have three second round picks in next year's draft. Maybe package some of that together with this year's first round picks and just kind of just go after more established talent. And I know it's exciting with the draft picks, and you never know what you're going to get, and it's great to have people in the pipeline, but I think the Sabres team is one that is just on the verge of being ready now, so I'd rather have more established players to add to that roster.
Yeah, I'm just going to add on to the fun thing that never, ever, ever happens in the NHL, and I hate all you GMs that don't do this. Stop making nicey-nice with other GMs and actually try to do what's best for your organization and your fan base, but Matthew Tkachuk, 24 and a half years old, 104 point, you know, left winger. He's an RFA. Hint, hint, nod, nod. Kevin Fiala, 85 point season from Minnesota. He's been 26 years old. He's an RFA. Patrick Laine, remember him? 56 point season. And then the other one, Brock Besser from Vancouver. He had a tough season, I should say, because his father died. He went through a lot of heartache there, but he's only 25 years old. He had a 46 point season, 71 games. So those are four RFAs that you're going to take a run at. If you're going to take a run at, those would be the four at the top of my list. I mean, I don't think you're going to be able to get Tkachuk and Fiala, but I mean, Patrick Laine and Brock Besser, I mean, that's a very possibility. Even if you don't sign them to an RFA tag and try to sign them there, maybe you can work out a deal with those two teams and say, hey, we got picks. We got some young players as well. You want to try to make a deal here? I would love Brock Besser. If you could bring Brock Besser onto this team, I would go insane. If you could bring any of those four team players, I would go insane. Matthew Tkachuk, oh my God, I would go. This would be a full-on 100% all-party episode if they were able to somehow get Matthew Tkachuk. And I know that's never going to happen. I understand that. Everybody listening here is probably saying this guy's an idiot. No chance. Yes, I understand Matthew Tkachuk is never coming here. The slimmest of possibilities. It's probably never going to happen. But if you get any of those four players, sign me up. I'll be so happy. I know that Kevin Adams did a radio spot. He's looking for another top six forward. He's looking for another bottom six forward. He's looking for goaltending. And he's looking for depth on the defensive line. So yes, everything. He's looking for literally everything. But you have such stability down the center of the line. You don't have to worry about centers at all. You're looking for wings to pair with the centers. You're looking for some more depth on the defensive line so you can kind of push those guys. So Bryson, for Fitzgerald, for Joakim Harju, they don't feel safe in that lineup. You want these guys to compete every single night. So their jobs are always on the line. You always got to play your best. You want the wingers to do the same thing. So if they can find a goalie, that's the number one priority for me. And then try to get a winger as well using these picks. I know Kevin Adams has said you got to fill out the prospects in your system. You got to make sure the farm system's always flush with talent. You're going to be losing Jack Quinn down there. He's coming up. JJ Paterka is on his way up as well. But I think if you can at least use one of these first round picks, maybe even two, maybe the 16 and the 28 and use your ninth and go get a top player, or not even a top player, but a top six player, top nine guy to fill out for these wingers that you're missing, I think this team would be instantly changed. And now there's still rumors that Buffalo is very much interested in Jack Campbell from Toronto coming over in free agency. If they can get him, get more stability in that goaltending department, this team could be in line for a playoff contending spot next year. It's just, what are you going to do with these very valuable chips that you have in the first round? I mean, it's, they got three first rounders this year. They got three second rounders this year. They have two sixth rounders this year. They have two seventh rounders this year. You have tons of trade chips. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 picks in the 2022 draft. There's no way you're using all of them. There's no chance you're using every single one of them. You're probably going to be moving up as well. If you can use some of these ones to bring in now talent, please do so. Please. I just want a competitive team that can get you through the tough parts of your schedule and stay competitive and stay in the race through April. That's all I'm hoping for. Even if you don't make it, if you're competitive all the way through, I'll be happy. So if this is a very critical offseason, and we've said it multiple times, this is a very pivotal offseason for this team to try to make that next leap. You did great last year. Some of these players stepped up. Tage Thompson, Jeff Skinner, Alex Tuch, all these guys stepped up into roles they weren't in before, and I mean, led them to a very solid season that we were not expecting. Not at all. It's just, you need to take the next step now. Now is the time. And I know Kevin Adams has said over and over again, you don't want to bring in guys just to take time away from the youngsters, but you can build around the youngsters. That's all I'm saying.
Just a quick correction. What are you saying? We have three second rounders next year.
Next year, yes.
Correct. But we still do have 11 picks. Your math there added up correctly. If we had three second rounds, we would have 14 picks.
I thought so. I said 3 seconds next year, but
I misheard it. Maybe that's
I don't know. We'll listen in post.
But either way, I'd like to see them, because we always kind of talked about not using a first round pick for a goalie. I would love for them to use a second round pick next year for a goalie if you do not get one in free agency, because that is something that you can do after this year's draft. If you don't get rid of any of those second round picks for next year, you kind of move past this draft. Once this draft is wrapped up, you're still sitting there with three second round picks next year. You can use one of those two bonus ones and go after a goalie trade and be like, hey, you know, we'll give you a second round pick in this upcoming draft and you give us this goalie. I think that is something that they could absolutely look into. I don't think I want to lose any of our first rounds for it, but if they're going to kind of look for the free agency avenue, like you said, with Campbell, that is a fine avenue to go as well. Overall, I think kind of what you said about RFAs, that is something I didn't really consider. And again, it's never going to happen, which is just kind of depressing. But that is something that they could do, is kind of go to that GM and be like, hey, listen, either we can make a deal for this player or we're going to RFA him and we're going to go after his tag and we're going to just take him from your team. Yes, you'll get our, you know, our draft capital, but that doesn't mean much to us. And you lose that player for nothing but draft picks. So I think that would be an interesting thing to kind of go to a GM with. Just be like, hey, this is what we're thinking. This is what we want to do. And you can either work out a deal with us or we're just going to take that player from you overall. So I think that would be an interesting kind of strategy to go in and make a kind of big trade where they can get some draft picks and players going back to that team for a different player. Or the Sabres can just use that RFA ability and just go and try to take them themselves. So it'd be interesting to bring to a GM, again, sadly, because the NHL is too nicey-nice. Like you said, it's just, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, so Phil, I mean, the NHL free agency opens about a week after the draft, which is a little strange. Usually free agency opens before the draft, in my opinion. At least it does in the NFL. But I guess, real quick, because we're right against it, I guess, what is the number one position you're looking for in this draft if they use the ninth overall pick? What position are you looking for them to take?
I think the big thing that they're missing currently is just it's kind of hard. I was trying to think about this myself, and it's hard to say if I want like talent, or like, do I want pure talent and skill, or do I want a player that is mature and just ready to go right now? And I think for me, the big thing they're missing is just an electric winger. I don't think you have someone who can skate coast to coast, burn five guys, and just bury a goal. You don't have that just electric, just winger. You just don't have, again, they have decent wingers. They have Tage Thompson, who's doing really well. They have Skinner, who's doing really well. They have Tuck, who had a pretty good season. They have Mittelstadt, who came on toward the end. You do have Krebs. You do have Cousins. You have Quinn coming up. Like, you have talent there, but you don't just have that overall, that Patrick Kane, that just player that can by themselves take over a game, or that winger just, again, goes coast to coast, burns a few people and makes that just highlight reel goal. I think that's something they're just missing, is that just speed and pure stick talent and pure just deking shooting ability. And they just don't really have it. I think Krebs can develop into it, because I think we've seen flashes of that with his passing ability. But at the same time, I think that is the number one thing I'd be looking for this season, I don't know if I necessarily want the smallest guy. Like we play in NHL when we play video games, we usually go super tiny to make our guy really fast. But at the same time, I just want someone who just has that electrifying skill and can take over a game all by themselves.
Yeah, 100%. I think you nailed it right there. I think you want a winger to be able to, I mean, add to this lineup. I know you got Jack Quinn, you got Jeff Skinner, you got Alex Tuch, you got a few other guys. But I think you're right. I think you're missing that one top line winger. And I know this draft is not very flush with top talent. I heard that there's like one top guy, Shane Wright. Then there's like a tier of like two guys. And then there's a tier of three. When that happens, where it's not like going from tier one to tier two, and you're looking at tier three guys, that's usually the time that you want to get out. Like, let these other teams that are interested in jumping up do that, and you can capitalize off that. That's the perfect kind of draft you want to be doing. So that would be, again, what I'm for. But if they do, for some reason, use it, which, again, we're hoping they don't, they want to bring in now talent and not have to wait 3 or 4 years for these guys to develop, I would definitely draft somebody from the wing. That would be the number one priority for me.
Completely agree. And we'll have to see how it all goes down. Hopefully we get some exciting just trades and news, and not just the Sabres hold their position and, you know, take three straight defensemen.
Yeah, I mean, next week is the calm before the storm, because the week after, July 7th, you got the expansion draft for the NLL, you got the NHL draft, and then the week after that, you got the free agency opens up for the hockey NHL, and then August 1st is NLL. So, I mean, news never stops. It's always going to keep coming, but I think next week is going to be the lull and the calm before the wave of storms come brewing at our front door.
I'll say, as far as off season goes, and, you know, sometimes we think off podcast like, oh, this is about our quiet season. No one's really playing. We got the Bisons to follow, and we got the PLL, you know, summer lacrosse. But a lot of the bigger teams that we follow aren't playing right now. But just because they aren't playing doesn't mean there's not constantly sports news. And like you said, even though we have 1 week before COM and just a ton of off season information and kind of exciting things go down. So we'll be here. We will keep you posted. But this kind of calm off season, no one's playing, doesn't really exist.
Yeah, it's never going to stop. So that means next week there's going to be massive news breaks. Something's going to go down. Like, something's definitely going to go down. But that's usually what happens. We think we have a calm episode, and then boom, it's no longer calm. But I guess, Phil, is there anything else you want to add to this episode before we say goodnight and get ready for a work week?
I am all set.
Okay, so on our next show, we will dive into the Scranton Wilkes-Barre versus the Buffalo Bisons. You know, series that's starting off there. It's a very low-scoring game, so it's going to be 18-16, 100%. Then we'll cover anything else that breaks with the three teams that are currently playing right now. I should say the Buffalo Sabres. We also got the Buffalo Bills that are in their lull before training camp opens, and then the Buffalo Bandits as well. So if anything breaks, we'll cover it, and maybe we'll add a nice little twist on our next show, since maybe it'll be a calm week. Maybe. But thank you all for listening to another episode of the Buffalo Sports Collective. Follow along with us on Instagram and Facebook at Buffalo Sports Collective, and on Twitter at Buffalo Sports Co. Visit our website at BuffaloSportsCollective.com. Subscribe to our channel wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, leave us a review on Apple and Spotify. Until next time, bye-bye!